Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, Fisker seems to be on life support, Tesla's plan for cheaper cars, and Polestar make a mobile phone. Plus, stay tuned because later in the show, I'll tell you what the latest research is saying about air quality and how it relates to electric cars. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. This is your trusted source of EV information. For Wednesday, 24th of April, I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. We'll start with some news about Fisker, the company which makes the Ocean. Disclosed in a recent SEC filing that it only has about $50 million left in available funds. In 2023, Fisker spent $904.9 million on operational and investment activities, which now leads to concerns about its financial stability. As of April 16th, Fisker held $53.9 million in unrestricted cash and $11.2 million in restricted cash, a significant decline from the $736.5 million it possessed at the end of 2022. Well, the 10K form highlighted that without additional investment, Fisker is at risk of bankruptcy, given its monthly spending exceeding $75 million on average last year. Fisker reported delivering over 6,400 Ocean EVs by April 16th this year, out of approximately 11,190 cars manufactured. That leaves 4,800 vehicles still in inventory. Fisker's workforce underwent a 27% reduction, with approximately 425 employees laid off between January and April of this year, bringing the total headcount down to 1,135 employees. Well, the company cited supplier dependencies as a contributing factor to its financial challenges, expressing concerns about suppliers' ability to provide components in a timely manner and at acceptable costs. Well, Fisker missed an $8.4 million interest payment on March 15th, and that indicates a potential bankruptcy if relief and additional liquidity are not obtained within 30 days from the filing of the financial statements on April 22nd, 2 days ago. To generate some cash flow, Fisker, of course, reduced prices of the Ocean SUV, which you'll have heard about on this podcast recently. Price discounts up to $24,000. They even hired a chief restructuring officer to navigate their financial troubles. Well, despite the efforts to stay afloat, Fisker's decline has affected Ocean owners who now face uncertainties regarding warranties, operation of the vehicle, over-the-air updates, and, more importantly, very rapid depreciation. While there remains a possibility of Fisker securing a partnership to overcome its financial woes, time is running out for the struggling EV startup. And as I've mentioned many times, my thoughts, first, second, third case, in all cases, are with the owners of the cars and the staff, not so much the leadership, but the staff and the employees of that company. I think everybody went into it with good faith. And if it does not work out for them, there's no buyout, there's no deal with an OEM, then in the inevitable wash up of all this, then it's going to be interesting to see where the fingers point and any liability that is incurred on this as well. I can see lots of commentary online from people blaming mismanagement, but let's just hold fire and wait to see what happens with the company before we do point the finger. But as I say, those that spent their own hard-earned on these vehicles in good faith could be left with vehicles which have less functionality than they were anticipating. They will still work, obviously. And what about the almost 5,000 cars in inventory? Wow. 4,800 Fisker Oceans not yet delivered. Lots of people cancelling their reservations, wanting their money back, which they're getting, by the way. They're not. No one's holding their deposits to ransom. So the company are doing the right thing, as far as I know. What about those vehicles in inventory? Would you buy one at any price? And there's an inherent value to those, because batteries will always be useful. There's never been a single EV battery that goes into landfill, even recycling. There's a huge need for an inflow into those and for feedstock to come into the recycling projects, but they won't be crushed. They'll be used somehow, even if it's just the battery in the vehicle. But let's hope not. What an enormous waste of resources on the planet that would be. I'd love to know your thoughts. Now let's talk the BMW i4 receiving a comprehensive design and tech update package. The electric BMW i4 actually emerged as the top-selling electric BMW globally last year. It went over 83,000 units delivered with the M50. That's the top of the line xDrive, the best-selling M model in both 22 and 2023 for BMW. Or BMW refreshing the electric i4 to distinguish it from its competitors like the forthcoming CLE from Mercedes-Benz, and at the topper end, the electric EQE. So some new tech, new design in here as well. The i4 has a revised, I would say, closed-off front grille, a new matte silver honeycomb pattern. Both models in the M specification get a new updated gloss black rear diffuser as well. Notable changes in lighting provide the i4 with more defined appearances, with a single LED module generating all the various low and high beams in one LED. Significant updates feature the smaller gear selector inside to bring it in line, I would say, with the iX1 and the iX3. New climate control, air vents, more minimalist style, smaller rotary switches as well, and a midlife refresh of the i4, which... I don't know, one of my friends who bought one of these, I think he bought the M50, loved the car, loved it. But he was coming from a Tesla, and his impression was, isn't charging a pain in the backside when you're not using the supercharger network? Yeah, it can be. It can be if you're a non-Tesla driver. But that was his impression. He loved the car itself. It was like, I've got to go back to a Tesla. I've got to go back. I can't do this without supercharging. Right, let's move on. And talking of Tesla, a strategic shift to more affordable EV models. We're trying to work out what this means. Tesla say they're altering their product roadmap to introduce more affordable EVs because of pressure on EV sales. Their earnings call recently and on the shareholder letter for the end of Q1, they blamed more of an interest in hybrids and plug-in hybrids as the reason why, one of the reasons why their sales were down, also blaming some of the disruptions to the supply chains in Germany as well. But like, that's always been the case in the history of the company. In fact, Tesla were up against it from the very beginning. They were always fighting combustion. They were always fighting hybrids. That never stopped them before. So all of a sudden, to blame hybrids was... it stood out to me. I'm not sure anybody else noticed it. But like, they've always been trying to push that water uphill, as it were. They created, in many ways, an EV market. So Tesla's done an amazing job. And I feel like blaming hybrids was an odd thing, but, you know, that's how they feel. The company aims to launch these new models, whatever they are, as early as next year or potentially at the end of this year, with a focus on increasing production and expanding its vehicle lineup. Despite the lack of any information shared on the investor call, Tesla stock surged over 11% in response earlier this week. Tesla's updated plan involves leveraging the existing production lines of the 3 and the Y and integrating elements of the current models and what they say were the next-gen platforms to expedite the launch of these new cars. Let's be careful. Are they new cars or are they cheaper 3s and Ys? Are they looking to bring economies of scale and supplier costs down so that they can say, well, we made a $25,000 car. It was just a Model 3 with a tax credit, you know, applied. So there was no, by the way, if you're thinking, oh, the Model 2, the $25,000 car, that's not true. I'll give you my thoughts in a moment. Let's continue. The company is working on a revised Model Y following the revised Model 3, so-called Highland. Elon Musk on social media denied ever using the name Highland, and yet now that people have got those vehicles, it's even on some stickers on the parts of the car. And so it's a name that Tesla do use. So an odd denial there from their CEO because, well, they've printed the word Highland on part stickers. If you look at the certain bits underneath as people are finding out, oh, look, that is a word. However, by blending the next generation technology with existing platforms, Tesla say they will double their production by 2025 and sacrifice some cost savings in the process. Let me explain. They were going to build a whole new platform, a whole new way of building their cars, which they've now scrapped. So they say, obviously, there won't be as many cost savings. We'll carry on making the cars the way that we make them at the moment. While Tesla has faced challenges in meeting growth targets and, in fact, declining target sales in Q1, they are optimistic about their growth trajectory. And the CEO, Elon Musk, hinted at a forthcoming reveal event August the 8th, where Tesla will showcase their autonomous driving technology, so-called CyberCab. That's the word he used. Their shift aims to reorganize the next phase of growth. So a couple of thoughts, a couple of observations. Love to know what you think. We think I'm on the ball or off the money on I'm going with this. So whether I'm misreading it. So last year, we were told that they were between growth phases. That the Cybertruck is not a growth vehicle. It won't contribute to the vehicle, the company, meaningfully this year. So we're between growth phases. So the end of the growth phase of the 3 and the Y, and until the Model 2 or $25,000 car arrives, that'll be the next growth phase. As you know, if you've been listening to this podcast, when Elon Musk said, we're going all in on Robotaxi in your Model 2, he didn't say it was cancelled. The Reuters report did, which was very well sourced with suppliers as well, saying that they've had those agreements terminated, cancelled, as it were. And so it does seem that what was going to be a separate Model 2 is indeed cancelled. Robotaxi could be a thing. And all of a sudden on this call, it's a return to growth. Oh, don't worry. Everything's fine. And the market loved it. I got the feeling, correct me if I'm wrong, that they were just saying, I say they, Elon Musk, the CEO, was telling the investor community what they wanted to hear, and they bought it. Because there was no product announcement about this new car that is built on the 3 and the Y lines. This is a company that released in 2017 details about semi-trucks, of which I think there are 38 in the world, and roadsters, and the Cybertruck took forever to arrive, and there's no hint of the new Roadster, which people have got $250,000 deposits down on, ever arriving. And yet all of a sudden they can pull a new model out of their hat, that's the word I'm looking for, pull it out of their hat before the end of this year. You can design and create what would be, on a, you know, for some car companies, a five-year cycle. If you go to China and speed that up, maybe 2.5-3 years, oh, you'll do that by the end of the year. And the market went, great, a new model, brilliant, nice and cheap, built on the 3 and the Y lines, great. I didn't buy it, but let me know if I missed something. I've listened to all the Tesla blogs, the Tesla podcasts, and all the, you know, the hardcore fan stuff going doolally over it. But no one could explain to me what it is, but everyone seemed to appreciate Tesla being a growth company again. Well, we'll see how quarter two does. So I'm keeping my powder dry on this. That's my thoughts, my opinion. I may be wrong. And like I say, let's look at the Q2 numbers of how the 3 and the Y go. And we'll make a judgment call further down the line. All right, stick around. Coming soon, we'll talk a little bit more about Hyundai's battery plans and VW's ambitious plans in China. Stick around, back in a second. If you hear some adverts, by the way, feel free to hit forward. Just skip the 30-second button on your podcast app. I'm not meant to say that, am I? But or listen to them, because I'm sure they're lovely ads. Back in a mo. Welcome back. By the way, a good reminder that Patreon supporters get the shows ad-free. You get your own RSS feed in your dashboard, and you can paste that into your favourite podcast app, and you get the podcast completely ad-free. One of the benefits of being a Patreon legend, and you can join the legends list at patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. Now let's talk about a very important topic, and that is air pollution, and how unhealthy air pollution is affecting 40% of the US population, according to a new lung association study. The American Lung Association's 25th annual State of the Air analysis reveals a grim situation in the United States, with almost 40% of the population exposed to unhealthy levels of air pollution. The report indicated that the number of people living in these conditions rose by 12 million from 2020 to 2022, now reaches a total of 131 million people breathing in polluted air. Also, the country is witnessing more of the very unhealthy or hazardous air quality days than ever before. Well, Catherine Pruitt is the National Senior Director for Clean Air Policy at the Lung Association and attributed this disheartening situation to a variety of factors, including climate change, which is undermining the progress achieved through the Clean Air Act, wildfires, which are being exacerbated by climate change, emerging as one of the increasing pollution sources that is difficult to control. Marshall Burke's peer-reviewed research published in the Nature Journal corroborated that, suggesting that wildfire smoke is an increasingly big issue. But of course, so is that of transport, one of the biggest polluters around the world. But in the United States, the transport sector, the biggest single source of pollution. Now, Dr. Lisa Patel is a paediatrician at Stanford Medicine Children's Health and pointing out that the root cause of the problem is burning fossil fuels like driving combustion cars. She emphasised the urgent need for political will to leverage currently available technology and federal investment in renewable energy and electric vehicles to mitigate the crisis. The State of the Air report analyses air quality data over the last 3 years, focusing on ozone, both short-term and year-round exposure to particulates. Now, worryingly, around 44 million people in the United States are now living in areas failing to meet all three of their criteria. Particulates, or particle pollution, from combustion vehicles, they're a fraction of a human hair's size. Maybe you see some diesel smoke pouring out. What's inside that is so incredibly noxious and harmful to you. I can't even begin. It infiltrates the lungs. This is such fine matter that it then circulates in the bloodstream and impacts your organs, increasing the risk of just a whole host of various health issues. Won't go into them now because, you know, let's not get too down in the dumps. Let's be positive and say that with electric vehicles, we're making a tangible change. And you can talk about where the electricity is made in various parts of the world. Yes, some countries are dirtier than others in terms of their grid. Norway might be clean. China is adding dirty energy production, you know, as well as a lot of renewables, but they're also adding, you know, coal-fired plants in China. So it's not the same around the world, and no one's getting it completely right. You can have solar panels on your house and know that you're driving completely on clean green energy, but those panels still had to be made somewhere. But we can do our best, and let's not let perfect be the enemy of the good, and let's try and do what we can to clean up the air around us and ensure, particularly for the next generation, that and generations that we leave behind something better than we inherited it. All right, let's move on and talk a little bit about batteries. And this time in Spain, Hyundai Mobis. Hyundai Mobis began the construction of a new EV battery systems assembly plant in Navarre in Spain. An investment of $128 million going into this. They'll start mass production in 2026. It's specifically designed to ensure a stable supply of battery systems to their customer Volkswagen. Occupying a 150,000 square meter site, the Hyundai plant is the first of its kind in Western Europe and is anticipated to have an annual capacity of 360,000 individual EV batteries per year. The commitment is being emphasized as part of their long established relationship between Hyundai Mobis and Volkswagen. The battery systems assemblies that are produced at the plant, which is the battery pack, the BMS, and other components as well, then get supplied to Volkswagen's factory in Pamplona, about 14 kilometers away. Hyundai Mobis operates battery system production lines around the world in places like South Korea, obviously at home, in China and Czech Republic as well, and additional facilities in the US and Indonesia. Talking of Volkswagen, they've unveiled plans to introduce 30 new electric vehicles in China by 2030 to align with the increasing demand for green motoring in the country. The company aims to achieve 4 million annual deliveries to Chinese customers by 2030, representing 15% of their total market share. Volkswagen's market share in China declined to 14.2% last year, prompting the push towards electrification to compete in the rapidly evolving EV sector in China. The chief exec in China, Ralph Brandstatter, emphasising the goal to maintain a strong presence in the Chinese market and for VW to get back to the number one position and be profitable. Two more stories, and this one might boil your blood like it did mine. The Daily Mail is a publication in this country. When people used to read paper newspapers, the Daily Mail made its name. They were also pretty early with digital stuff, and so they still have a degree of influence. There's obviously a certain type of peer person that, you know, still goes to buy a newspaper. I take a newspaper myself, but it's a weekly called The Economist. I love print. I love holding things, but... And also, you know, my mum, my stepdad, I think they read the Express, which again is, you know, a name that is probably more familiar to the older reader. But the Daily Mail is has published an article which highly misrepresented a report from what was the Asphalt Industry Alliance. Now, the original report didn't come across my desk. You won't be surprised to hear. The Asphalt Industry Alliance was named in this Daily Mail report, which falsely claimed the cause of potholes in Great Britain is because of electric vehicles. Now, Daily Mail did 2 add 2 equals 5, or whether you think there's anything more sinister to this, and said, well, EVs are generally heavier, and therefore they must cause potholes. But hey, the top 10 heaviest vehicles in this country, none of them are EVs. They're all just stupidly big off-road SUV things that you drive little Tarquin to school. Now, the article claimed that EVs, because they are heavier, were the main reason for the increasing costs and cause of potholes. Following reader complaints and a general outrage, the Daily Mail, once the damage was done, of course, issued a small correction, stating that the report didn't actually blame electric cars specifically, and it then removed any reference to electric vehicles from the online version of this article, which remains. They changed the headline and took anything about EVs out because it's misreporting. Part of a pattern of misinformation and disinformation aimed at undermining government policies related to the phase-out of petrol and diesel in this country. The Director of Transport Decarbonisation at the Department of Transport, Richard Bruce, highlighted the consistent spread of false information from organisations like the Daily Mail against electric vehicles. A study by the Climate Action Against Disinformation, CAAD, organisation found that frequent readers of newspapers like the Daily Mail tend to have a stronger belief that climate change is not real. Well, the need for accurate reporting on policy, on EV policy, especially concerning EVs, is crucial to the public effectively. Now, I don't think that anyone listening to this podcast is a climate change denier, an EV skeptic. If you are, that's cool. Let's have a conversation about that. I think most people who listen to this, judging from who I chat to in the comments and the emails I get, you can email me, hello@evnewsdaily.com, are generally like-minded people. And I find that the community in this podcast are people like us who get it, who have a difference of opinions, maybe over technologies or car companies or whatever, but are all fully behind the idea that there's an interest and enthusiasm in electric vehicles. So the danger from these kind of organisations like the Daily Mail and things like that cannot be underestimated, and we must always push back on it. Well, Polestar introducing a new mobile phone to finish off the news today. Polestar unveiling the Polestar phone, a new smartphone with 16 gig of RAM, a terabyte of storage, and a price tag of $1,000. You can't get it yet, it's in China. The Polestar phone has a Qualcomm Snapdragon 8 Gen 3 processor, quite a large battery, and 80-watt wired charging and 50-watt wireless charging, which is good because Polestars have wireless phone charging inside. The device runs on Polestar's own OS, enabling AI image search, virtual assistant access, and more. Customers buying the new Polestar 4 vehicle, if you want one, you can have a complimentary Polestar phone with your new Polestar 4 vehicle. And companies like Polestar and indeed NIO are exploring the synergy, the boundary between your phone, which is a key, but also tells you all the information about your vehicle, charging and things like that. You can choose to map your journey on your phone, send it to your car. The boundary between the car and the phone increasingly blurred with the different user experiences and connectivity options. And that's your podcast for today. Thanks for listening. As always, everyone on the Patreon Legends list, I could not do this without you. You really are legends that allow me to do this work and hopefully spread the word about electric vehicles. Hey, if you can do one thing for me ever, it would be to share this podcast either with a friend, family member, on a forum somewhere publicly, and say anyone's learning about EVs, maybe fighting disinformation, maybe just people hook into kind of, I might buy an EV. I need to learn about them. You could maybe send them this podcast. Please help me build the audience in 2024 and grow the show. Thanks to our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the Nevo EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map, and Lease Plan Electric Moments, providing all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good one. I'll see you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.